We here at Shush acknowledge that we are on the traditional homelands of the Puyallup tribe. The Puyallup people have lived on and stewarded these lands since the beginning of time and continue to do so today. We recognize that this land acknowledgement is one small step toward true allyship, and we commit to uplifting the voices, experiences, and histories of the indigenous people of this land and beyond.
Welcome to the Puyallup Public Library's podcast, Shush with Debbie, where we interview and connect with people of the library, city, Puyallup businesses, and the community. I am Debbie. I work here at the library as outreach technician, where I mostly do outreach, but I really do a little bit of everything. I am super excited to welcome our fabulous guest, our systems and information technology librarian, Paul Stonebridge. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Debbie. Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am thrilled that you are here. All righty. So I'm going to ask a couple questions that I ask all of our guests. And the first one is, tell our listeners who you are and a little about yourself.
Well, as you said, my name is Paul, and I am the Systems and Information Technology Librarian here. Basically, I take care of all of our IT-related problems, maintain our computers, our internet, our public printing. Some of that fun stuff when you come in and get on our free Wi-Fi and you're trying to print 10 pages from your cell phone. I'm the guy that's keeping track of that and kind of keeping it online, doing our kiosk for self-checkout, kind of keeping all of our front-facing technology working,
yes.
As well as all the stuff in the back that the staff uses. So it's a big thing to kind of keep it all online because it's a big building and we have a lot of staff here and
exactly.
A lot of computers.
We have a lot of computers and a lot of technology.
Exactly. But that's what libraries are about. So
exactly.
We want people to come in and use it, and we're always trying to upgrade it. So to keep it kind of on the cutting edge, it takes a little bit of time and effort.
Like those lockers, Holds lockers we just installed.
Yes, it's one of our big new projects.
Mm-hmm.
We just installed public pickup lockers, 24/7, 365 lockers on the outside of the building. You can use your library card, scan it to pick up a book that you've pre-requested, and we placed in there for you. 3 a.m, you're coming home from downtown party time, and you decided you need to get that book. We've got you covered.
That's right. They need their books.
Exactly.
Okay. Very good. Number two, tell me about your connection to Puyallup and the Puyallup Library.
Well, I live in Puyallup. I'm actually a resident in South Hills, so
mm-hmm.
This is kind of my home
Very cool.
area. This is a great place to work. I'm just down the street. I like to be able to say that I'm helping the community I live in and that I'm
so
working
true.
For the people that are surrounding us here. So I get to know a lot of people. It's great. I have that sense of connection. You know, I go to some of the businesses. I see people that are at the library. I go to the mall and I'll see a kid that comes into the library regularly. So I kind of have that hometown connection I feel with it rather than someone who's commuting long distance to go to work. So it's very nice to say that you're part of the place that you live and contributing directly.
That is so important, I feel. It makes a huge difference, don't you feel?
It does. People just feel more like you understand what they're going through, what they're about, what they need, and it makes it a little bit easier to deliver that level of service.
Exactly. It's the perspective that you have being among the people
exactly.
that you serve. So where did you grow up?
I am the quintessential military brat, so I am all over the place. I was born in Colorado, I lived in New York, I've lived in Virginia, lived in Nebraska, lived
wow.
in Hawaii,
wow,
and Florida for a long time,
yes,
and then out here to Washington, and I've been here for many years. So I was all over the place, a little bit of the whole spectrum of the U.S., really, kind of center and the northeast and the south and the east coast and the west coast. So
yeah.
I've done a little bit of everything. I don't really have a particular place I grew up. I've got sort of an amalgam of everything.
Yeah.
A little bit of the best of all the worlds, I hope.
That's so cool. That seems appropriate for you.
It does explain it. It also says why people tell me I have no accent whatsoever.
Exactly.
They can't identify one at all.
Ah.
Everyone says, I just can't pick it out because I picked up a little bit of
little tone. Bit here and there.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. Okay, thank you. Are you still friends? This is your second question.
Okay.
Are you still friends with anyone from elementary school, high school, college?
Being that military kid, it was tough for elementary school and, you know, pre-internet. I'm not Gen Z or anything, so I wasn't connected online with everyone, so
right.
I lost track of a lot of the elementary school people, though I know a couple of them are out and about there. But middle and high school, I do have a couple that are around. You know,
oh, that's cool.
They live in Florida now because that's where I went to those.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, more of the people that I know now are people I picked up on travel.
Oh.
Things. I have a lot of friends all over the place that are doing trips, doing tours, going around the world. And I've just realized these people, hey, you live only 20 minutes away from me. So one of the guys that's one of my top friends here, my best friends in Washington, is just up in Bellevue. I ran into him in Thailand, of all places. And he was like, oh, I happen to live in Washington. I said,
what?
And he's about 45 minutes northeast of me. So
That's so cool.
Met him years ago, and so we hang out to this day. So that's more of my friends are in the more recent sense. Although, you know, a couple of those high school friends have hung around.
And
I think they say count yourself lucky if you keep anyone from high school.
I agree.
Into later adulthood.
Yeah, that's really cool. Your third question is, was there a teacher who had a particularly strong influence in your life? Tell us about them.
Yeah. One of my favorite professors of all time and one of the neatest guys I've ever met was a guy named Roy Van Nest, a medievalist at the University of South Florida.
A medievalist.
He was. He
Just
was
say that again, medievalist.
Medievalist, yes.
Yes.
He was the medieval history professor at University of South Florida, and one of my degrees is in medieval history.
Mm-hmm.
So I took many of his classes. He was the one and only guy at the time that did that. He taught Viking history as well.
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of European history. And he was a very interesting fellow. He was very anti-establishment. He was an unusual guy. He had this little cramped office in a far-flung building. And he used to take a big stamp of anything that the school sent him and just stamp some commentary on every paper they sent him that he would
a negative?
Something, well, not quite negative, but just some sort of flippant response. He had a whole collection
I'm
of
trying
stamps.
To think of what would be a good stamp.
Well, some of them are not safe
appropriate.
For broadcast, but, you know, some of them would be just like, go away, you know, and it was
perfect.
A huge, you know, 72-point font, and he'd stamp it all over the paper.
That's hilarious.
He knew everything about everything. He'd read thousands of books. He could talk for hours and had a bizarre, wry sense of humor. One of his, for example, Viking history classes, he arranged to have four guys in full costume just storm into the room and carry him off in the middle of class. No warning for any of the rest of us. And
I love this guy.
They just ran out of the room, carried him away, and ran down the street a little bit. And we were all sitting there going, what the heck is
what is
and then,
happening?
And then he came back and just kind of dusted himself off like nothing had happened and went back to talking.
And he paid those guys?
No, they were just students
of
his.
Oh, just students of his. But he had the costumes, I bet.
Exactly. Oh, they had them, I think. Everyone loved him.
Oh, they
were just, you know, so he'd get all the reenactors and all of the people that were just into his
stuff. Oh, my gosh.
Stuff. And he was just so popular guy that I think everyone wanted to do something.
Oh, my gosh. I wish he was still teaching, is he?
Oh, no. He's long retired.
Okay, gotcha.
I hope he's still with us because I've lost track of him over the years.
Yeah. Let's look him up because I'd love to see his picture and read about him.
Exactly.
He sounds like you, honestly. He sounds exactly like you.
I think I picked up some of him, and he was one of the very first professors when University of South Florida opened. So
that
gives you some idea how long he was there.
Whoa. Yeah. What a find. You were meant to be his student.
Oh, yeah. Serendipity.
It was
right there, for sure.
I love it. Okay, here's an interesting question. Your number four that you chose. If you had to eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, see, it's so hard to pick a meal.
It is.
But, you know, the type of thing that you can just eat repeatedly over and over again for me is something very simple. Pasta.
Usually pasta.
Spaghetti of some kind. But I like the aglio e olio, the butter and olive oil.
Say that again.
Aglio e olio. If I'm
oh, my
that right.
word. Okay.
I don't know if I am ever, but I try to trust my pseudo-Italian.
Mm-hmm.
But that pasta is so versatile. You put butter, you put olive oil, you can mix garlic, you can mix any vegetables you want. Any meat, technically, although chicken and pork and things work better. It's one of those, it's so widespread, so varied, and you can just enjoy it so much that you don't ever get sick of it. Anytime I was in, you know, when I was in college, when I had a little bit more money, I would buy some of that and just make it a huge bowl and live off of it for a week.
Yeah, and then add different ingredients. Yeah.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Throw in whatever I could find, whatever frozen vegetables I could scrounge up, you know, and so it became kind of entrenched in my diet there. And I still do it to this day. It's comfort food, I guess, now.
Yeah. Comfort food is good. What is it's a noodle, so what does it look like?
It's because it's the olive oil and butter, it's just kind of almost clear, you know, it's real, you see the noodles basically.
Yeah.
The color of the vegetables, the color of the ingredients that you add to it, whether you put olives in there, mixture. is first and foremost, rather than the sauce taking over the color.
Gotcha.
So it becomes all about the side ingredients in it, and the pasta is kind of a delivery.
Yeah.
So I have a real, I don't know, love of this kind of idea of imparting flavor to things.
Yes.
By the virtue of all the mixture that you put in there.
Yeah, changing it up.
Exactly.
Oh, that sounds excellent. Okay, so that was number four. Number five is, if you didn't have your current career, I would be sad. What occupation would you like to try?
Well, I've tried one. I'll tell you, and I might go back to it. I've been a tour guide for many years, often as a side gig, and then I did it full-time for a while. And we're talking international tours, so overseas state tours in Southeast Asia, Japan, and Western Europe. I wouldn't mind going back to that, but if I couldn't do one I've already done before, the other thing I really enjoy is diving, so I would...
Dive? You're a diver?
I am.
That's something I didn't know about you.
Yeah, it is. I have
you have all the gear?
Yes, some still. I haven't had a lot of cause to use it here, and you need different gear in Washington.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But, you know, I still will occasionally go out on it. Like in March, I'm going to Australia to dive the Great Barrier Reef.
Oh.
So I'm, you know, hoping... I would love to be a dive master and do that full-time. If I had to, one of those, I could do anything I want, money not an object kind of.
Yeah.
I think I'd love to go into, you know, the South Pacific somewhere and do that gig, or Hawaii.
You mean taking people to...
Teaching them to dive, taking them on a dive trip, showing them around, you know, would kind of combine the travel thing. But if I have to pick a new career, then something else I enjoy.
Oh.
Take people out to see the wrecks.
Like wow.
In Australia, we're going to go out and see some wrecks in off the coast of Brisbane. We're going to go to the Great Barrier Reef and see some of the wildlife and some of the hopefully still unspoiled areas there.
Wow.
You know, you got to get out there soon.
Yeah, because it's not going to be long.
The bleaching is happening in there. And so, you know, I'd love to show people that kind of stuff and say, all right, here's a whole new world, if you will, to a Disney phrase.
Yeah, but it's true. It is its own world.
For sure. And so I don't know. I think that idea of that foreign environment, that you're the visitor in the truest sense of the word, is really a cool experience for people, especially once they've done it a couple of times and they get comfortable enough to actually look around.
Yeah, exactly, because there would be so much to learn before you got to that point.
For sure.
I feel like that would be...
You do. You spend your first several dives just kind of worrying more about your gear and what you're doing than about what's around you. But everyone's a little different. But, you know, after two, three, four, five, you get pretty comfortable and you're like, okay, I can actually look at this fish now and I'm okay. I feel good.
Did you ever dive without all the gear, you know, just do like, you know, the pearl divers?
A little bit. Not so much free diving, but I've done... You know, with just the tank and the snorkel and the regulator strapped onto me and no other gear in Florida, especially where it was nice and warm.
Right.
And there are a lot of shark tooth fossil beds off the coast of Sarasota there that are great for shallow diving. They're like 17 feet.
Yeah.
And every time there's a major storm, there's fossil beds that sort of flip over.
Oh, that's cool.
And you can go out there and find a whole bevy of new fossils, manatee bones.
Oh, that's right. Because you're into fossils.
I am.
Yeah, that's another one of your interests.
I love fossils.
Of the millions.
And, well, you know, hey, varied interests keep things exciting.
That's right.
And there, you can pick them up yourself. You can go grab a megalodon
tooth
and just find it right there on the seabed and take it home with you.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, let's move on to, let's see, that was number five. Oh, okay, so six is right here next to it. What is the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
Well, this one's a little more serious, a little more dark, but, you know, working in libraries for so long, a lot of what we do is akin to social work. We're trying to help people.
So true.
And people come in with great need, sometimes in great trouble, and we're the last place they're turning, or they don't know who to turn to.
Exactly.
And sometimes you can help people and sometimes you can't. That's the
true.
The one, I guess the biggest lesson is that you just can't save everybody.
That's true.
You have to really just accept that, because no matter how hard you try, sometimes people come to you for help, but they're not really at the point where they really want it.
True.
And you can give them all the resources in the world, but unless they're willing to reach out and grab them themselves, they're not going to get anywhere. And it's sad watching that happen. And
it is.
But you realize, man, there's so many people that need it. How do I pick and choose? And while there's no good answer to it, sometimes you just have to say, I have to try to help the next person and do what I can. So it's, that's, I guess, the biggest lesson and the hardest lesson.
It is kind of a hard lesson. It's true.
You have to pick. Yeah, you just have to realize you cannot save all the people.
Right. Yeah. That's really an important thing to realize and deal with, because there are so many, like you said, and that need help.
And sometimes if you spend too much time in one, you miss out on where you could be helping
another
where
you
could be more effective or more, maybe you're the person they really need. And
then
hopefully, maybe you'll set the stage for that other person, but they're not ready yet. And someone else will be the one that helps them.
Yeah, true. Well, that was beautifully said. Okay, we're on our last question that you chose. This is a biggie. What is your earliest memory?
Oh, well, see, this one goes back to food again. I don't know. So many of my memories are food related.
You're a foodie.
I am.
Yeah.
And when we lived in New York, I was very young, and we lived in upstate New York in Syracuse, and my parents had a very large piece of land there, just out in the boonies. And huge patch of blackberries on the property, and raspberries and other things all mixed together there. And that's one of my earliest, when my brain came online memories, is going out there and them taking me out to just eat them off of the vine, right off of the plant itself, and eating them fresh. And just so I have memories of just grabbing whole handfuls of them and putting them into my mouth as a little kid.
Yeah.
They're just, to me, they seemed enormous, right?
Right.
That and these huge plant towering over it was probably nothing more
than
like a few feet tall. But
to you.
For my memory is maybe two and a half years old. I'm going, these are enormous, and I'm eating this fruit, and I just kept eating fruit until I couldn't eat fruit anymore.
That's adorable. You know, another thing it makes me think of is one time when our family was all together and camping, and out back of the house we were renting, it was in the San Juans, where these blackberry not a field, but a huge yard full, you know, they went all across, and we all, you know, did the same thing you did, but they were warm from the sun.
Yes.
And there's a difference to eating berries on the vine that are warmed by the sun and just being plucked and popped in your mouth.
And fully ripe.
Yes.
Not picked 4 days early.
Exactly.
And
yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
One of those great pleasures in life that people
don't,
you haven't really lived till you've experienced something like that.
I agree.
Whether it's a berry or a peach or a spout, you know, something like that.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Paul. So now we're to the segment of the interview where we ask the last couple questions that we ask every guest. And number three, you'll have some info on this one. What book or books or film or films would you like to recommend and why?
Wow, there's it's a lot. I look at a lot of stuff,
wide
array of things, and I read a lot of history and a lot of nonfiction.
Yeah.
So I read a recent book on the new take on the history of Central Europe.
Oh.
To pull out the title. But it was a book about all of the things in Central Europe and what brought everything together, what brought all of the kind of modern laws and the societal divisions and the country divisions that we have all together in one spot, one kind of new take on this history here.
And yeah.
I'll bring up that title for you.
Okay.
That's why I'm terrible with names, so it's always the Middle Kingdoms, a new history of Central Europe.
Oh, the Middle Kingdom.
Martin Rady, R-A-D-Y. He's pretty good. He's very, I don't know, succinct historian and kind of. It was a very, I don't know, quick read for a history book.
Right.
You have to like history, but I enjoyed it, and I got a lot of new insight that I hadn't.
Interesting.
Had so that was pretty cool to see a focus more on. The kingdoms and the kingdoms, quote unquote, in the center of Europe, as opposed to focus more on England and France and Spain than so many other histories do. And I would bring up maybe another brand new one, the Japanese, A History in 20 Lives. So it takes the perspective of 20 different people's lives and kind of tries to convey Japanese history through the lens of those people's existences.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's
that sounds like another wonderful one.
Yeah, it's that sort of vignette thing. You get a little bit of a glimpse into everyone, and it makes the point of a broader historical perspective.
Do you have the author on that one?
Oh, that one, I do. I actually brought a list, luckily, in case of this kind of question. And that's Christopher Harding.
Okay.
That literally just came out December 12th, I think.
Okay, perfect.
So that's a brand new
one
out there, but you can find it online everywhere. A really neat looking cover with the kind of different cards almost of people's faces on it.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, those sound great. Any films?
Oh, what have I seen? I haven't seen a whole lot recently.
Okay.
You know, hey, I have to say it. I was one of those people that was skeptical of the Barbie movie at first and loved that one over the summer.
Ah, you were skeptical, but yet loved it.
I loved the heck out of that one. And
me too.
I thought it was so much more well done and campy and upbeat and fun than
But yet had a message.
And I hadn't seen a movie in theaters in quite some time.
Uh-huh.
So to kind of have that be my return to theaters was pretty good.
That's good.
And
You cry.
And one other one that was really great recently was Hayao Miyazaki, the Japanese
filmmaker. I'm curious about that one.
The Boy and the Heron. I did actually see that one in theaters. And strange piece. Visually stunning, probably the most visually pleasing of any of it he's done.
Really?
And I heard the highest budget of any movie he's done, maybe even any Japanese movie in general, so that does explain
it. Yeah, it does.
Though the storyline is Alice in Wonderland and beyond in a way. It's just so strange and disjointed and whimsical and just psychedelic in some ways.
Wow.
And if you like that sort of disjointed storytelling with the bizarre visuals, it's the way to go.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Well, let's see. There's a couple things I want to just touch on before I let you go. Number one, today you took down the display case. Could you just describe it to the listeners? Because that display case was like no other.
Oh, well, yeah, that was a fun display. Mm-hmm. I do medieval weapons and armor.
Mm-hmm. Are you a medievalist?
I am. I am at heart a medievalist. And I've taken to making, over the years, taken to making chain and leather armor pieces.
Chainmail.
Chainmail and various other jewelry pieces and decorative pieces, you know, armor pieces, some with a realistic kind of history and some a little more whimsical and fantastical.
Yeah.
I'm not a purist on either end. You know, I'll go with whatever just strikes my fancy. So I set up a display of those with some of the some cool weapons to show, although I don't make the weapons myself, and some of the jewelry and just some of the more interesting whimsical objects like bottle covers and things. And I don't know. I think it made for something a little bit different that the library hasn't showcased.
Exactly.
Before. And we had a really... It was really nice, too, because we had a nutcracker display right next to it. So I thought it was really fun to
have. It was balanced.
Colorful nutcrackers and dozens of them right next to all these weapons and armor that were kind of dark.
Medieval stuff.
Medieval and kind of brutalist in nature. And, but still fun and educational. And we ended up having a lot of families and kids asking about it.
Yes.
So I think
it made me so happy.
I think we ended up checking out more books on the Middle Ages than we have in a month.
Oh, my gosh. That's what it's all about. Teaching and learning. I love it. Yeah. Well, your stuff is beautiful. And I'll add, to just as a side note, that on Halloween, Paul wore his full costume armor, which had chainmail underneath and leather stuff and pieces all handmade by him, down gauntlets, up and down, legs, arms, helmet, you name it. So it's pretty dang impressive.
It was fun, I'll tell you. It was about 50 pounds worth of gear. I was walking around with it at work all day, but it was worth it.
It was worth it.
We had a lot of people think it was really fun, and the kids were just kind of
yes, all day. Exactly. So cool. The other one I want to mention, the other thing about you here at the library, is your travel talks that you've been giving have been super well attended, and people are just loving them.
Thrilled. I just started those in October. They often are themed. I do a different country or area every month. Talk about the culture, the people, the food, the history, the sights and sounds. Try to always provide food from that country directly.
Yes, you do.
I track down the beauty of living in the Seattle and Puget Sound area is that there's always a market of specialty food origin everywhere.
Yes.
I can find just a little bit of everything if I ask around and look deep enough and, of course, help out a local small business.
Yeah.
Bring in that food. Let everyone taste the food from that country. Give a real experience to it. And then hopefully educate people. And honestly, we've had a huge increase in the number of people. We had almost 50 people show up at the last one.
We did. It was fantastic.
And that was great. It was a fun time. We talked about German Christmas markets. Debbie here played some music because she's our musical guru. And entertained everyone with German Christmas songs and others. And I think it kind of brings that sort of cultural cohesiveness to the library.
It does.
It teaches people about other cultures and societies and brings an appreciation to it when you can do it in a fun kind of engaging manner. And
exactly.
We even had some kids and teens coming, which is the biggest thing there. I love to see it.
I love to see that too.
Experience a new people, a new society, and walk away going, oh my God, I learned.
Yes.
This.
When can we go to Germany or whatever?
Yeah. We've got a couple coming up. I don't know when this will be posted, but we've got Iceland in January. We've got Central and South America in February.
Fantastic.
We're going to be talking about Egypt in March.
Really?
And Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia in April.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So, oh, my goodness. And you've been to all these places, so you bring some keepsakes that you have from each of the cultures besides the food.
Right. I show pictures. I bring stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Stories.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I try to only go to places or talk about places I've been.
Yeah.
And 90% of the pictures are my own.
Yeah.
Generally, I only add if I just really need to display some specific thing that I didn't ever get a picture of. And I try to tell people that. But it's I'm trying to share it from my own experience. So it's a little more real, more personal in there. And then not so clinical when I'm talking about it. I'm
exactly.
Trying to keep it fun and keep it more of a personal experience that that the listeners would actually have if they went to that place.
Exactly. It's wonderful. So with that, I'll wrap things up here. Paul, I'm so glad to have you here on Shush. I'm so glad to have you working in the library. You have changed my life with helping me with the podcast, as well as my husband, Paul, helping me with the podcast and everything you do here. I go to you daily for questions and help, and it's a better place having you here, and I just appreciate all your talents and skills and how professional and fun and funny you are.
Well, thank you, Debbie, and that's high praise coming from you, and I would love to think that I can stay for a long time and hopefully bring a little bit of this back to the people going forward. And, hey, if you want to come and see any of my programs, you're always welcome to come out to the library, or if you want to just chat about medieval history or armor or something random, I'm almost always at the desk at least 3-4 hours a day.
Yep, and both desks,
both
Reference
desks.
And Circ.
Upstairs and downstairs,
downstairs.
Just look for the guy with the long hair and the beard. You can't miss him.
Yes, you can't miss him. He's a medievalist, remember? Okay. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you, Debbie, for having me.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.